Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donica, Jace here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. We've had a good time here today. This will be our new home on Predators home dates, and we're excited about that. Don't forget MTSU, they will not be at home this week, and the Blue Raiders will travel to Iowa to take on the Hawkeyes. Kickoff is set for 11 a.m. Can be heard on ESPN 102.5 The Game and 97.5 down in Murfreesboro. Blue Raiders and Hawkeyes.
That'll
a lot of people. Tell you what, Iowa's looked pretty good. Has looked pretty darn good this year. But I think right now, what's interesting is yes, Ohio State has looked good against lesser opponents. But I think people now are starting to realize Wisconsin.
Yeah.
How good are they?
Well, it's funny when you look at, and we were talking to Mitch yesterday. When you look at the rankings. You know, and you go through, okay, you know these teams are legit. I put Wisconsin in that category of, I think they're pretty for real.
Well, we will find out, but a lot of people certainly are starting to be big believers now in the Wisconsin Badgers. Let's bring in Chris Mason. Start our weekly chats with him every Wednesday at 1 o'clock. He's just an all-around cool guy, and he's on the line with us. C-Mace, what's up?
I see what you did there.
I'm doing great. I appreciate that. And yeah, I did see what you did there. And you're the wordsmith and the way that it ties together. But my alter ego is very cool.
Uh huh.
And I am.
Does your alter ego come out? Like, when does he come out a lot? Is it during the day, at night? Does it matter?
When I need him. You know, if I'm ever disheveled, I have a misunderstanding or anxious or nervous, like, cool guys just. It's always there for me, you know?
It's a good thing to have in your back pocket, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, or in my head.
Wouldn't you love to have cool guys' hair, wouldn't you?
Oh, my gosh. Don't even get me started on that. Yeah.
We were talking about the top goalies in the league. The Athletic tiered all of them and did 1 through 31. Okay, basically every starter in the league. And I know some teams have a hard time identifying a starter, but nonetheless, they did that. And they only had three goalies in Tier 1. And it was Vasilevsky, Bobrovsky, and who was the other one?
Carey Price.
What do you make of that when you hear that?
Well, if I'm looking at those situations, I would say, you know, obviously I don't necessarily agree. There could be an expanded few goalies in that tier. I'm looking more at what's behind those guys. So, you know, I guess Tampa's got Vasilevsky's a clear cut, and they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with their second guy. Montreal, same kind of thing. And then who was the other one in there?
Bobrovsky.
And again, so this is another guy that's, I'd say, a similar thing. You know, he's definitely the guy that's going to carry the lion's share in Florida now. And you don't know what's going to be behind him. So I think a lot of that might have to do with, you know, what tandem you're part of. I think you could make, you know, an argument for other guys. But, you know, it's like, you know, in fantasy sports, it's the same kind of thing. Is you tier guys based on what kind of production, how many games they're going to play, how many wins they're going to get. And then, you know, you throw, obviously, statistics in there as well. So, I mean, I think that's fair. I think, you know, Holtby could be a guy, but he's got... You know, someone behind him, maybe a little bit pushing it in Copley. I don't know. You know, there's definitely a couple other guys that you could maybe throw in there. But for the most part, you know, there's not a lot of clear cut number one guys. And obviously, you go to, you know, Pekka is a guy that's, you know, definitely should be in that conversation. But look what's behind him, right? And there's a lot of talk of Pekka's workload getting cut a little bit more this year, although he did have an all-star year again last year. He won the Vezina the year before, so it's tough. There's just a lot of intangibles. I think John Gibson is a guy that could be in that tier as well for Anaheim, although, you know, maybe the wins might be tough to get to, but performance-wise, he's a guy that could be there. Ben Bishop, you know, there's guys that are off the list. I'm sure those guys are probably in the second tier. I haven't seen the list, but
they are.
So a lot of it to me is like the big picture and the tandem. When there's nothing behind the guy and they're, you know, that's the answer for the team, I think, you know, you put those guys maybe up a little bit. That's my thinking on it.
The one thing that, and by the way, the Blues, there'll be no Justin Faulk here tonight because he doesn't play for the Hurricanes anymore. He plays for the Blues. So I think the one intriguing one, because when you think about this division, I mean, I guess the intriguing part of Hellebuck would be which Hellebuck are you getting, last year or the year prior? There's no intrigue. Pekka has been a steady force for a long time. Devin Dubnyk, you know what you're getting at a Devin Dubnyk year in and year out. Corey Crawford, when healthy, he's obviously dealt with a lot of stuff that's kept him out of the net. But the really intriguing, and Ben Bishop, I think, has been one of those steady guys. The one that intrigues me is, you know, the defending Stanley Cup champs. What is Jordan Binnington? Can Jordan Binnington, as you know, Chris, you know, easier said than done. Did he do it all year and did they ride him to the Stanley Cup final? Yes. But now the book is out on him. The film is out on him. Everybody can study his game. And now we're going to find out, can he follow up that magical year with another year? How would you answer? What do you think Jordan Binnington would look like this year? The same? Less? Better?
You know what? It's a to be determined, and I think you touched on it. To recreate that, it's not easy to come up and have the success, especially the level of success that he did, and he did do it, over a long period of time, and it seemed happened, you know, with the team, and then Binnington came up. He was playing well in the minors, and he continued to do that at the NHL level, and it was kind of the perfect storm, and it went, you know, right on to winning a Stanley Cup, which is incredible. And, you know, I got to be honest, during the year, I was still, I think like most people, were just skeptical as they went along, kind of having the same questions. Well, can he keep doing it when it comes playoff, the crunch time, and then the season's on the line, and then in playoffs, he was fantastic. But now you're starting all over again. So there's no momentum. There's no coming into a situation. And, you know, I've been in those situations when the expectations aren't really on there. You had Jake Allen, so if Binnington came up and he didn't play well, oh well, you know, they didn't have the weight of the world on him, and he just seemed to carry that through. But now you got to start over, and now you're going to go through the grind as the number one goalie, and he's going to have to, you know, rest on, like, what a start to your career. You get called up, you light the league on fire statistically, you're winning every single game, you really didn't deal with much controversy or anything like that, and then he went in the playoffs and he was outstanding. And to win a Game 7 against the Boston Bruins, I mean, that was a heck of a series, and he was awesome. So I'm going to be very curious to see that. I think the Blues obviously have an awesome team. The Central Division's, tough as nails again, and that's going to be a big one. I'll be keeping an eye on. I'm sure a lot of people will. But he seems to have the right mindset, and it seems. Again, at first I was kind of, I didn't know what to think of some of his interviews and stuff, but the more I watched him and the more that he backed it up with how he played, I became a believer. But again, he'll have to, it'll be a different challenge to start out this year with that.
Chris Mason is with us. And Chris, we had a chance to talk briefly to Peter Laviolette this morning. Yesterday, the three of us here at Pete and Terry's were over at Centennial. We had a long conversation with Peter Laviolette. One thing that I think it's a big theme. It's pretty easy to figure when you say, okay, P.K. Subban is on a different team. Matt Duchene is now a Predator. But this, I think there's a central question for this team to really cook the way they think they can, and that is, can they have, night in and night out, two top lines, two really good lines where another team that has a checking line, they have to make a tough choice. Are we going to try to stop Johansson's line or Duchene's line? To me, that's really, if they can get that going, a lot of good things will fall into place.
I agree, and I think the way they've got it set right now, and I think, you know, everybody had to be extremely happy with the way that Forsberg and Duchene look together, and, you know, you have Arvidsson and Johansson on that other unit that, you know, obviously they've got a lot of chemistry, and I think the big thing is to find out what the pieces are going to be beside those guys. So if let's say you're going to start with those two on your first and second line, however you want to break that up. I mean, it's pretty a lot of talent there dispersed on two lines. And then who's going to be the other guy? There's a few guys. I know Kyle Turris is going to be playing with Johansson and Arvidsson, see how he does on the wing. You know, there's a lot of talk of Granlund over on the other side to start with, Duchesne and Forsberg. You know, Craig Smith is a candidate, and there's a lot of other guys too that might get an opportunity to try, you know, until they find the right combination of guys. But I agree with you, Will. I think, you know, Peter seemed pretty excited about the thought of that too, of having two real offensive lines that are threats to score and really create, you know, a challenge for other teams to match up against, because there's a big decision to make in terms of, you know, do you play your checking line against one line and do you put your top line out against the other top line or you know, or what have you. But I do think with the depth of the Predators, they've always had depth and they've always had a lot of, you know, very capable players, but I think adding Duchesne just gives you that consistent scoring threat on the two lines. You're able to break up, you know, the Jofa line, and you have a lot of firepower on both of those lines, on the first and second line, instead of, you know, trying to mix and match and hope that, you know, like last year, the Turris Fiala Smith line could continue the way they did before, and it just never really materialized. So I think this way is the way it's shaping up to look right now, I think gives the Preds a very good look to their team and makes it a lot more challenging for other teams to match against.
You keep in close touch with the folks up in Winnipeg, I know, because you played for that franchise, and they love talking to you about the Predators. So what do you make of what's happened up there? Because they're such a talented team, but there's been a lot of turnover on their defense corps. And they've got to be concerned right now, especially with the two unsigned star young forwards they have.
Sorry, I just cut out there for a sec. I just missed the first part.
Just your thought about Winnipeg and where they are right now with Bufflin situation, the losses on D, and the unsigned players.
I think that's, you're in trouble. You're losing, you know, you go from one of arguably, you know, a top five, maybe in top three defensive corps, however you want to look at that situation last year, and you have two of your best young players, your top goal scorers, unsigned right now. I think that you talk about the Central Division, and, you know, we're talking about Hellebuck too. He was a product of, you know, the way that a team plays, as any goaltender is. And I think the way that they were playing defensively with their ability to score, you know, made it Jets a real threat, you know, to challenge every year until now. So I think you lose, you know, Bufflin, Myers, Trouba, Sherratt, who's a very underrated defenseman, very solid guy. He's in Montreal now. And, you know, you replace him with, you know, Anthony Betetto and some of the other players that are going to be filling in. That's got to be a scary situation. And I know that, you know, you probably won't hear a lot of that from the people speaking about Winnipeg, Paul Maurice, and all those types of people. The guys are there, are going to have to get it done. But that's going to be a completely different looking team. As you lose that much leadership, that much firepower, it's going to be I think it's going to be a struggle.
And then of course the next question is when will they get Bufflin if they get back, and then when will the other guys sign? How much time will they get them done right before the season starts, or will they have to play some games without those guys signed? So with that in mind, Mace, here's my next question. Take the Predators out of the mix, look at the rest of the Central. There's certainly plenty of candidates. Who would be the best team that you would take right now, roster wise, in the Central? Who do you think is the best team in the Central? Take the Predators out of the mix.
Well, I'll have to say with those guys, I'd look at these teams equally. I give St. Louis the benefit of the doubt because they won the Stanley Cup and then they just added Justin Falk, who's a heck of a player. I'd have to put them up there as the favorite, and Dallas right behind them, because I think Dallas, with the development of their young players last year and the additions of Corey Perry and more importantly Joel Pavelski, I think that's a team that's going to be a tough team. And the way that they played defensively with their goaltending, I think those two teams to me are the cream of the crop. Colorado maybe right there. I don't think they're quite there yet. But I think it's going to be a three-way dogfight between the Preds and those two teams.
One thing that we haven't had a chance to talk to you about on the show, you went through, as a player, some pretty significant lockout labor situations. what was your reaction when you saw that there's going to be labor peace for at least 3 years because the two sides like the way the talks are going, and fingers crossed, maybe they can extend it past that. But minimum right now, labor peace through 2022.
I mean, as a player, I never really got involved in the politics as a player, and maybe I guess I should have more. But there, you know, we had good representation at the NHLPA. You just want to play the game, and I know there's a lot of important issues that have to be sorted out with pension and different things, and the business side of things, and making sure that everyone's getting a fair deal. But for me, especially, as a fan and as a broadcaster now, and even as a player, ultimately, everybody just wants the games to be played. And I'm just really thankful that, these guys, it seems to be from every work stoppage, it seems to be building a better relationship between the owners and the players. And I think ultimately that's what everybody was hoping to see. And I'm really glad that that's the case, because the last thing any sport needs, I know some of the issues are, it's necessary, and that's the way it has to be done in order for both teams in terms of strength of where you're negotiating from. But man, that's the best news I think anybody could have got, was to see that don't have to worry about that for a few years.
Chris, good stuff as always. Looking forward to our weekly visits again this year on the show. Appreciate it as always. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll talk soon.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
All right, that is Chris Mason, all-around cool guy and Willie's partner in the booth on the television side of things. Predators and Hurricanes tonight. Final home game in the preseason here tonight. Same two teams back in Raleigh on Friday. We'll come back. Adam Vingens put out a piece on The Athletic asking guys in the room a question about their teammates. I'll tell you what I'm talking about and what their answers were on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good stuff from Chris Mason. Appreciate his visit. We're looking forward to, remember, Wednesdays at 1 o'clock with him. I hinted that there was a piece put out in The Athletic, Adam Vingens, who will join me tonight, the first segment of Predators pregame starting at 6 o'clock, put out an article titled this, Predators Dressing Room Survey, Which Nashville Player is Primed for a Big Season? That was the subject matter that he asked the players in the room, who is primed for a big season? The results are in. And by the way, this was not private. This was, Adam goes through player by player and who voted for whom. So before we break all of it down, I'll just ask you, who do you think won that category?
Who do I think won the category?
Yep.
Prime for a big season.
Here's the breakdown. One player got four votes, one player got two votes, and nine players got one vote.
Okay, so it was spread around.
Yeah.
Mikhail Granlund, I would say, would be a good...
You know what? He got a vote.
He got a vote.
He got a vote. Right. He was one of nine.
And could you obviously couldn't vote for yourself.
No, nobody did. I don't know if that was part of the criteria.
Right. But the hockey mentality is usually...
No, it said choose one teammate who you believe is primed for a big season. I guess they're saying, hey, somebody other than you, Adam was asking.
Philip Forsberg?
Philip Forsberg did receive votes. He got two votes.
He got two.
So he is.
So somebody got four, and
somebody got four that you haven't named.
Matt Duchene.
Matt Duchene did get a vote. He is one of nine.
So are you getting at? It's a bit of a surprise who this guy is, or
no, I don't know if it's a surprise. I think it's interesting because I think if you haven't seen the article and if you haven't cheated.
I have not.
I would say most people will get this. There's a lot of candidates, and I think probably more times than not, people will come up with the wrong answer.
All right, well, this would be an interesting theory. Would Kyle Turris get votes because people want him to bounce back? They're trying to pump him up. They think he's an easy chance to rebound?
Is this who Jared just pointed at?
Jared did point at Kyle Turris. I would not have Like for me, where I'm sitting, I think he is a candidate for a bounce back. But when you say a chance for a big year, I don't think I would vote for him. I might look at Granlund.
Did get a vote.
He got a vote.
He got a vote.
All right.
Got a vote.
All right, well, just tell me what you got, because, I mean, I could sit here and say all the names, but
not even named the position yet.
Okay, Ryan Ellis.
Did not even get a vote.
Didn't get a vote.
Didn't get a vote.
UC Saros.
Did not even get a vote.
Matthias Ekholm.
Got a vote.
Got a vote.
You're going to eventually get it.
Well, I'm just going down the roster. I've been half the roster.
I mean,
the
next answer would be.
Well, I mean, Roman Josi and Pecorine have been having great years. I don't know why.
Roman Josi got a vote.
He got a vote.
From Matt Duchene.
Okay. So Pecorine?
Nope.
Dante Fabbro?
Dante Fabbro, after 17 guesses, Willie has correctly guessed the number
one
answer.
He got four votes, Dante
Fabbro.
Four
votes,
wow.
Dante Fabbro. Isn't that interesting?
That's an intriguing angle, that's how they would vote.
So do you want to hear a little bit of the breakdown?
Yeah, so what were they saying about
Fabbro? So you asked about Granlund. Ryan Johansson actually said Mikael Granlund.
Yeah.
Okay. He said... He said, I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. He's not going to surprise us, but just with his numbers, when he came to our team last year, they weren't the same as Minnesota. With him maybe starting with Duchene and Forsberg or whatever it may be, I think he's going to take off. It'll be a fun watch.
By the way, it does look like it's not just a training camp, experiment.
Tourists on the wing.
It does look like Forsberg
and one of them
Duchene.
Sliding back.
It does look like Forsberg and Duchene, maybe with Granlund, is something that they are seriously considering and may go ahead and open up the gates with that and break up the Jofa line, at least for starters.
Yep. I told you Matt Duchene said Roman Josi. He said he believes he's one of the best defensemen in the league and he can win a Norris Trophy. He goes on to just talk about Roman Josi.
Right, and that surprises nobody. But the Fabbro thing. Give me a Fabbro.
Okay. Kyle Turris says, I'm going with Fabbro. He's going to have a great year. He's a really solid player. First full year as a rookie, he's going to do great. Mika Salamaki, I might have to say Fabbro. He's a young player and obviously really talented. He plays smart hockey and has got a lot of skill and still keeps it simple enough. He's been really good. I don't see any reason why he can't keep playing well. Austin Watson is the one who voted for Kyle Turris. To your Kyle Turris one. Or actually, Jared, I guess, is the one who pointed for Kyle Turris.
Yeah.
Austin Watson gave the vote to Kyle Turris. Victor Arvidsson says Dante Fabbro. He's going to be really good this year. Vice versa, Dante Fabbro said Victor Arvidsson. He gave a vote to him.
Did they make a little pact? Hey, I'll vote for you.
But they did vote for each other. Nick Bonino, Dante Fabbro, good player, young but mature, had a good showing at the end of last year. Just seeing him up close, I just feel he's got all the tools. His mind is right. He's focused. He does all the things he should do. It's fun to watch. There's your four votes for Dante Fabbro.
That's a good question to ask, and I am pleasantly, I don't know if I'm surprised, but it shows you that hockey players like talking about other hockey players, especially teammates, not necessarily themselves. So it's a great way for people to sort of throw it out there. But at the same time, I think it's telling who got a lot of the votes, right? I'm not surprised it was spread around, but Fabbro getting four votes is intriguing to me.
Forsberg was second with two votes. Do you want to hear what one teammate said about Philip Forsberg and why they voted for them? This is good. Listen to this.
Okay.
I'm not going to tell you who. I'm going to read it first, and then you tell me who said it. You'll never get it. I have to take a look at the room. A lot of good options. I'm going to say Forsberg. he's going to score 40 this year. Who am I?
Who am I?
I have to take a look at the room. A lot of good options. I'm going to go with Forsberg. I think he's going to score 40 this year. Who am I?
You are... Daniel Carr?
It's good because you're never going to get it. UC Saros
going with that? Forsberg. Okay. I think there's definitely a belief that if Forsberg plays 82 games, he's capable of getting 40 goals. If he has a little bit of puck luck.
But that, for a teammate to come out and say that, that's pretty cool. You know, that's it's interesting.
I always say this in terms of, is a guy going to get 30? Is he going to get 40? It's the really important stat is, does the team rank in the top 5, top 10 of goals for per game? Because every year is different. Like, who had the year last year where everything went in? Arvidsson, right? Everything went in. He had an unbelievable year.
In a short amount of time.
It just may not happen like that this year. Maybe he gets 30, but he's got to play 82 to get it. And that'd be a great year. But if he goes down a few, maybe there's another guy. Maybe this is the year where Forsberg just has everything go in. You just need a certain amount of guys to have that kind of year to have the season you want. But I think the central question, and I ask this to Mace, you tell me what you think. How good could you envision things being if they have two lines every night that are productive? Right, because 2 years ago, when they won the President's Trophy, the second line was pretty productive. It may not have been scary. Hey, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Craig Smith, Kevin Fiala, and Kyle Turris are coming to town. They didn't scare you, but they were productive. But this lineup could be scary when teams are lining up. Kind of like, you know, just think of teams that have had that kind of firepower. Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh with Malkin on one line and Crosby on the other line. I think you could have a top six here that if it falls into place, you could say, man, you got two really tough lines to deal with here.
Yep. No, I think
that's the whole idea of doing what they did. Trading Subban, bringing in Duchesne.
No doubt. That's why Line A has been on the second line. But problem is,
the Jets are one of those teams.
I was going to say,
they jump off the page. They're like, how are we going
to
stop
the first
two lines?
Or first line.
Right.
And first page.
And he's got a sign to be on that line, on either one of them, any line.
Steven Santini, who will be in the lineup tonight, said, I'm going to take Mattias Ekholm. He's such a great player, such a good skater, plays both ends of the rink really well. I think he's really underrated. No one really talks about him, but I think he's a superstar, caliber kind of player. I think he'll have a big year for sure.
If I could pick one defenseman and one forward, Granlund would be my forward, and Ekholm would be my defenseman. I think Ekholm is going to be unleashed. And he just has a chance to play a bigger offensive role. We know what he's going to do defensively. He had a tremendous year last year. If Fabbro can do his thing, Ekholm is really going to shine, I think.
We will come back more on the other side on this Wednesday afternoon of Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Spent a little bit of a bombshell tweet coming from a former Titan we'll read to you in just a moment. Happened during the break. Hey, don't forget, our NFL pregame show, right back at it again this Sunday morning as the Titans get ready to go down to Atlanta and face the Falcons. All the action begins at 7 o'clock, 7 to 9:30 in the morning. So you're going to get 4.5 hours of pregame coverage right here on 102.5 The Game. And then at 9 o'clock, it's going to switch over, or 9:30, excuse me, it's going to switch over to George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue, where from 9:30 until 11:30, Jared and Floyd Reese and Chris Sanders, Forever Titan, will be giving you coverage leading up to kickoff of Titans and Falcons. Of course, that every week brought to you by Wholesale Link, powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House.
You mentioned the George Jones. It reminded me. I don't know how many people have been watching. If you are not aware, the Ken Burns documentary on country music, which has so many obvious ties to Nashville, like two-thirds of it are like, so-and-so went to Nashville. It is fantastic. I mean, if you've watched the Ken Burns baseball or any of his things, the Civil War, the Vietnam War, if you like country music at all, or if you just want to know a little Nashville history, it's outstanding. I got glued to it last night. And it's eight parts. I didn't even know it was on until last night. It was like part seven was last night, but it's on PBS, you know, NPT, Channel 8, I guess is the way to describe it. It was awesome.
How did you stumble upon that?
I just stumbled upon it last night. I was like, "What? Where have I been? I got to watch this." So last night was the 70s, basically, up to the early 80s. It had a lot of it had some Oak Ridge Boys in there. It had George Jones in there some, and Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson. And tonight, and you can record this. It's the 80s up until I don't know if it's all the way through the present.
Wow.
I don't know if there's eight parts or nine, but it was awesome. Like, I'm not even a huge country music fan. I was just really tied. You know, it was really well done.
Okay.
Good stuff. Now,
good to know.
To the tweet.
By the way, I was watching Real Sports on HBO, and they did a big piece on Richie Incognito. Man, that dude's got issues.
Yeah.
This just
okay, I'll have to watch that.
I didn't know about a lot of the story. The 2 years off from the NFL, whew, just so they weren't exactly
okay.
Him handing out food to the homeless or
okay.
singing in the church choir.
All right. Let's get to the tweet here because this is interesting.
At CrushBoy31, which is Bernard Pollard Jr., of course, former Titan. His tweet minutes ago says this. The Titans culture is awful. People dogged me for speaking the truth. But you're hearing your leader basically say, we're soft and we suck and no one cares. I said it before and I'll say it again. Sell the team, new coach, new GM. The fans deserve better.
Sell the team.
I mean, you talking about pulling the pin and rolling that tweet down the room, down the aisle. Okay. Now, here's a little audio from Delaney Walker.
Okay, so that's who's referring to when your leader says you're
yes.
soft. Okay, so let's hear the audio.
When I came in the league in 2006, I know that's a long time ago, the atmosphere was a lot different. You know, we were 1-2. It would be pissed off guys walking around here, calling guys out, team meetings without the coaches. But today's football, it's a lot different.
No.
A lot of these guys can't take that. A lot of these guys don't like to be called out. They want to fight or they want to be traded. And it's that's pretty much where we're going today with this game. Is that you can see the rule changes and everything is just different.
Now, my question off of that would be, what is the context of the question was he asked? Was he asked about modern-day football? Or do you think he is trying to say something about his own locker room? Because Bernard Pollard, we know this. He shares that absolute same attitude about football. He didn't like. He was a physical player.
Yep.
He was the old school.
Yes.
If you come over the middle,
he's
I am going to
light
make you
up.
Pay.
Yep.
All of that, and he started getting fined, and you know he was frustrated. You could tell he was outspoken. I don't like the way the game is trading. So, does this really line up with what Bernard Pollard is saying here? Or are we just talking about the nature of the game of football has changed? Because Bernard Pollard's talking about the Titans. I don't know if Delaney Walker was specific to the Titans, or maybe he's just trying to subtly say, hey, some people need to get ticked off in here and do something about the fact that we're 1-2. I think both could be true, right?
Yes. He is, in fact, in the last 5 minutes, he's been responding to some people on Twitter, and he says, are the Titans 1-2? Did he say here? He's talking about the Titans, too. So obviously people are questioning basically what you're saying. And he's going, and so look, this is the way I read it. And then he just tweeted at somebody, you just fine, keep running from the truth. Obviously he's very, you know, he's hell-bent on saying, look, I know stuff you don't. Basically this is the way I look at it. He's telling everybody, I know stuff you don't know.
Okay.
And so I'm telling you, now, I don't know why he would go as far as to say, sell the team, new coach, new GM.
Sell the team.
The fans
sell the team
better.
Is not going to happen.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
But when he says Delaney Walker's basically saying the team is soft and they suck and no one cares, then to me, that's not somebody – I don't feel like Bernard Pollard, especially when he's answering people on Twitter, I don't feel like he's – it's just his opinion. I feel like he's – He's obviously talking to somebody, right? Somebody's.
I don't know the answer to this. Where does Bernard Pollard live? Is he still in this area?
I think he's still here, is he not?
Because that is a key component of this.
He's been doing some stuff here and there on ESPN. Yeah, yeah. But they just fly you up and, you know.
You ask yourself, how would Bernard Pollard be able to have a real sense of what is going on in the Titans locker room? He's a few years removed from the team, but there are people, there are players that he would have played with, certainly played against, but probably has a relationship with. And so, to me, it's not out of the realm that he has a sense that that locker room is frustrated because there's a sense of the guys being soft. I don't know. Because Bernard Pollard is also just an outspoken guy that is willing to have strong opinions, whether they're informed opinions or not. Enjoyed talking to Bernard Pollard. You love having him on your show because he is going to give you an unfiltered opinion. My question is, what sense does he have of this locker room?
Well,
or is he just going by that Delanie Walker soundbite and making an assumption?
He has put the Delanie Walker video attached to his tweet that, once again, if you're just tuning in, reads this. This is Bernard Pollard in the last 10 minutes. The Titans culture is awful. People dogged me for speaking the truth, but you're hearing your leader. Like I said, he's got the Delanie Walker video attached to this, so he's calling, rightfully so, Delanie Walker, a leader of the team, basically say they're soft, they suck, and no one cares.
Like, do you think that one of his former teammates, whether it's Delanie Walker, who he did play with, or other people that have been around for a while, he had an off-the-record conversation, and that player or players told him, Bernard, man, our culture is terrible. We're soft, etc. Because that could have happened. But I would say this. I see Mike Vrabel and John Robinson working extremely hard to build a good culture. Right? Now, soft, that's a – I don't know. Do you think this is a soft team? I not on defense. I think they play pretty well. I think they're – so it's a they've struggled to get the offense defense, going the way they want. I don't think Derrick Henry is a guy that is soft to go up against.
Well, not
recently.
I was going to say not he's until come on. Things
he's
turned
improved
around.
In that
we,
area.
We used to talk about the bouncing and the then you could view it that way, right? Yeah. But I guess the way he's been running,
he's run
at the
pretty
end of
hard
last
recently.
Year and now I think it would be a lot more. I think if you're going to go down that road, I think you'd probably have to start on the offensive side, right? I think you would identify the offense before you would start on defense. I mean, I don't know how people would. But, I mean, once again, he's got to be getting this from somewhere. There's a reason. I mean, you come out and you say that. You're getting something from somewhere. And I don't know why he would take it all the way to sell the team and start over. The fans deserve better. I mean, something has happened for him to just put that out there today in the last 15 minutes.
I'm still not ready to just take that 100% and say, wow, he's dead on right. I'm skeptical a little bit of how much knowledge he has of their specific situation. Would you agree with me? I think Vrabel and Robinson, they have worked hard to build a good culture, a good locker room, right? Some guys that haven't conformed, they've gotten out of there.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we'll come back. We'll close out Wednesday's show on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thank you, Chip. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Wednesday afternoon. Look, we don't know the context of why Bernard Pollard decided to tweet this out in the last 15, 20 minutes. I will say this, Willie, and we were talking during the break. I will have to admit, I don't know who he's talked to, where he's getting this from, how this all came about, how this was hatched, why he felt compelled to say that. Pretty strong comments if you're just tuning in. Bernard Pollard, former Titan, at CrushBoy31. This is his tweet in the last 15, 20 minutes. The Titans culture is awful. People dogged me for speaking the truth, but you're hearing your leader, who he's got a video of Delanie Walker, basically say, they're soft, they suck, and no one cares. I said it before, and I'll say it again. Sell the team, new coach, new GM. The fans deserve better. If I'm admitting anything from my observation of watching Delanie Walker, who we've been around now for many, many years, I will have to admit I do feel like his body language has not been great this year. I mean, I think we discussed on the show, we were kind of stunned by the whole thing after the Indianapolis game of ask the coach. You're going to have to ask the coach. You know, it felt right. like a – You know,
that's not Drew something he ever done before.
Next question, it felt like a Marshawn Lynch. I'm only here so I don't get fined. I'm only here. You know, it's like repeating that every question, you're going to have to ask the coach. Go ask the coach.
And he'd been here for a long time and done any number of post-game interviews and never done anything like that.
It obviously came off as a player. I get it, albeit off a loss to the Indianapolis Colts, which is well documented. We've talked about he's had virtually no success here against the Colts, so he's frustrated, but still out of character for him. Clearly, he was perturbed about something. For him to conduct, I guess, a meeting with the media at his locker after a game and basically keep saying, I don't know, you have to ask the coach.
Well, he was just doing his regular, you know, talk after the game, but I still struck me as odd. He has been outspoken even more so. He's always been a great interview. Right, he's always been a guy we've really enjoyed talking to because he's a pro's pro. But it seems like he's been a little bit more unfiltered. Like, he clearly made it known early in camp that, you know, hey, I'm back, and I've noticed some of these power rankings of tight ends where they've got some rookies who have never taken a snap in the league ranked ahead of me. Like, so he's had some quote board kind of stuff. I also remember that you said the body language. Remember the play where Tajay Sharp caught the ball and then went backwards instead of picking up the first down? There was a reaction emotionally from Delanie Walker on that play. Kind of like, I can't believe he just did that. You know, it was frustration. Certainly justified.
The interception, right? Thursday in the back of the end zone, which, you know, right there in front of him. It was intended to him. It was clear frustration on you know, his body language with that throw, which was obviously short. You got to throw that.
Yeah, not intercepted, but broken up. You're saying on the.
The one that was intended for him.
He was open both times in the end zone, and the ball didn't get there either time. So, he's right to be frustrated. It's good. It's refreshing. I think you got to be careful how you do it. I hope he's doing it for the right reasons to try to get the desired results. But it is worth noting.
It is.
It's a little different than what we've seen before.
Yep. That'll do it for us. Don't forget tonight, Predators and Hurricanes, 6 o'clock pregame, 7 o'clock puck drop. That will do it for us. You have a great rest of your day. We'll speak to you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Stay tuned. Jared and the GM. That's next.